Classic Business with Michael Avery on FMR.
Speaking to Richard Spur last week, in the immediate aftermath of the Jagersfontein mine tailings dam collapse, it really emerged that there are some serious issues that have remained unresolved when it comes to the way that the mining industry's tailings are regulated. And I was reading an article a few days ago written by my good friend Dr. Anthony Turton, who's with the Centre for Environmental Management at the University of the Free State, which I thought really encapsulated the policy issues expertly. Tony, always a pleasure chatting to you. If we just zoom out for a bit from the immediate disaster, it really is clear that mining continues to be a flywheel in the South African economy.
Yes, good at you and the listeners. It's important to note that mining as an industry predates the creation of South Africa as a sovereign state. And in fact, when South Africa was created as a sovereign state in 1910 through the Act of Union, there was no legislation in place for any of the mining other than what was then known in those days as Digger's Law. And Digger's Law was a negotiated agreement, if you like, or approach to conflict resolution between the different people that were laying claims to the different resources in the country. So Digger's Law was almost the kind of zama-zama approach back in the 1800s, which is really where we are reverting to in the new democratic South Africa more than a century later.
Yeah, as we're dealing with these zama-zamas, I mean, it's such an interesting parallel that you draw, because, of course, it was, the discovery of gold on the Witwatersrand that led to the formation of the great mining finance houses. And from there, a lot of the mining regulation and formalization of the industry sort of followed. When we fast forward now to the issue of tailings dams, I mean, tailings dams were never really built in residential areas, but that's changed as we see more and more people squatting closer to the tailings dams. What is the history here that bears noting when it comes to the country's tailings dams?
Yes, so if we go into the evolution of law in South Africa, we've probably had two phases of legal evolution, maybe a third phase post-1994. But the first phase was really about regulating rights. Who owns what I refer to as a justiciable right? So who is the mining rights owner? What is their responsibility? Where does their responsibility start and end, etc.? So that was the first phase, and that enabled capital to flow into the mining industry on a massive scale. But then the second phase was, as you go deeper and deeper and you're chasing your production faster and faster, you have accidents. And as accidents happen, so people lose lives. So the second phase is now about occupational health and safety, workers' rights, things like that. That was really a second phase of development. But now we're going into a third phase of development post-1994, where the justiciable rights are being challenged or being altered without thought to the undoing of all of these other complex liabilities and responsibilities. But we now are living in a situation where, if we go back to the original planning design, the mine was established in a barren piece of felt, a shaft was sunk and a tailings dam was begun, and people migrated to the mining industry. So the tailings dams were in open felt long before there was human population around them. So we now have a situation where, if we accelerate to the present, we drive through any leafy suburb of the mining area, and you'll find that the tailings dam is right adjacent to a housing, a residential estate, etc. And we now get angry that tailings are hazardous to people, and yet the mine tailings dams were there before the people came there. And if we look at 1994, in 1994 it became pivotal because there were a number of legal changes that happened, and in particular, there was the dropping of the influx control regulations. So people flocked to the cities in droves, and the only land they could find to settle on was, in fact, your tailing disposal facility land, TDF land around mine tailings dams. And it was that uncontrolled, unregulated flow of people that also had rights. They had all sorts of human rights. Once they've squatted, they cannot be moved, etc. And that has now created a new phenomenon whereby approximately 1 million people are living in close proximity to mine tailings facilities. And this now starts posing a whole raft of very, very complicated questions about who's responsible, what are the risks and hazards, how will this scrambled egg be unscrambled?
Because they are at risk. I mean, the risks may differ from tailings dam to tailings dam, but all those 1 million people are clearly at risk of either a dam collapse and having their housing washed away or drowning or being exposed to toxic chemicals. Now, it does raise all manner of questions, though. You were part of a research team at the time, as I recall, with Dr. Chris Hartnady, who's a professor of geology, who were having a look at this. Whatever happened to that report? Because you detailed in your feasibility study on reclamation of mine residue areas for development purposes, that these risks were clear and present over 10 years ago.
Yes, that was a project that was launched by the Gauteng government, or the Gauteng provincial government, when Nomvula Mokonyane was the premier. And the plan at that time was to start developing what was perceived to be undeveloped land that happened to have tailings dams in it. And already at that point in time, there was a lot of development on that land. So the Gauteng legislature wanted to develop it for food production and for small-scale farming, etc. But coming out of that now was this whole risk assessment of your different tailings dams. Every tailings dam, we can say almost as a blanket statement, every tailings dam has got a hazard associated with it, but all hazards are not equal. It will differ from place to place and from tailings type to tailings type. So we had a situation now where more and more people were moving closer and closer to the tailings, and in fact, one of the spin-offs of this was the financial risk arising to your bondholders, your banks and your financial institutions that were financing housing development in close proximity to tailings dams. And that started posing a very interesting situation now, because the financial companies had to start protecting themselves by redlining certain areas, because it simply was too risky from a bond perspective to finance those. So there's a whole myriad of very complex activities that are playing out in the background, most of which the general public are completely unaware of. But that report that we tabled in 2011 was basically buried, because what we said there was that the biggest risk of all is to do nothing. Rather do something badly, which is a lower risk than doing nothing at all. Because by doing nothing at all, you've now are accelerating the settlement of those lands. And by accelerating the number of people that is living on those lands, all of whom have got human rights that cannot be moved, et cetera, yeah, you're simply compounding the problem. And it ultimately is going to come down to a situation where you either have a catastrophe on your hand that's going to force some kind of class action suit or something against the state or against the mining industry. That's the one option. Or the other option is that you start moving the hazard from the people, which means reprocessing the tailings dams. And the third option is moving the people from the hazard, which, of course, now with the history of South Africa and forced removal, is not a politically acceptable option. So those are the three options that are generally available, but to do nothing is the worst of all options.
And sadly, that is apparent in terms of what happened. I mean, nothing was done, and it really underlines the fact that we've had a weak state for several years now, and that is the worst possible outcome. I was told that years ago, Madiba asked Johan Rupert's late dad to build a school in the area, which, you know, Johan, when I was speaking to him about this, said we did. And Reinet invested in a consortium in a job creation effort and sold it over a year ago to Star Gems. So he is not sure who the current owner is. And again, here we go around in the circle to say, well, who's responsible now that this tragedy has happened? From a policy perspective, Tony, and as a concluding thought, what is the overarching message here? And what's the big issue to have emerged from this to ensure that we don't have a repeat, and when those million people are free from the risks that tailings dams pose?
Well, I think the policy challenges are massive, because we can't wish away the fact that there's a million approximately people that are directly exposed on a daily basis to the hazard of tailings. And gold tailings are fundamentally different from diamond tailings in that gold tailings contain metals, one of which is uranium. And yeah, in fact, Johannesburg is the most uranium contaminated city in the world. So we can't wish that away. It's, you know, it's just not going to be possible. So the policy challenge has been that in the century and a bit of mining, Nobody's ever thought about what to do with the waste product, the end result of mining, those tailings dams. And I think the disaster at Jagersfontein is now going to start focusing attention of the state and government into what we need to do to either make those safe or to insulate the population from the hazard. But it's just not going to go away. And whichever way you unscramble this egg, it's going to be a complicated process. You know, it's literally a dilemma where every alternative is equally unappealing.
We are on the horns of a dilemma, and the dam tragedy certainly cracked that egg wide open. Dr. Anthony Turton with the Center for Environmental Management at the University of the Free State, with some of the big policy issues to have emerged from the Jagersfontein tragedy. You're listening to Classic Business.
Classic Business with Michael Avery on FMR.